I'd like to make a very brief statement, a couple of words, and then I have a very definite question to ask the members of the forum who spoke this evening. For a long time, the working class and the American people have been looking for a revolutionary party to lead them in their struggle against the U.S. monopoly capitalist class, and to lead them in struggling to overthrow the reactionary rule of modern American fascism. Now, there hasn't been any party in this country for over a generation, and there's a very good reason for it, which is the treacherous role, the treacherous political behavior that the revisionist Communist Party in the United States has played by leaving the working class and the people with no party and with no way out. Now, this dark ages of history of the American people is rapidly coming to an end, and the reason that it's coming to an end is because of the growing unity among the Marxist-Leninist forces. It's this unity that's putting an end to this period and that's ushering in a new era, which is the era of revolution. Now, some of the Marxist-Leninist comrades believe that without a revolutionary party, there can be no revolution. And these comrades have sat together as the preparatory committee for the Conference of North American Marxist-Leninists. On November 19, 1972, this committee issued a call for a Conference of North American Marxist-Leninists. This call is a very concrete step in the process of building a new Communist Party and of beginning the process of overthrowing the monopoly capitalist class. Now, the call for a Conference of North American Marxist-Leninists says that all Marxist-Leninists, whether large groups or small, have every right as well as every obligation to present their views openly for discussion. It states, "There are many differences on the crucial task of building the Marxist-Leninist party of a new type, but these differences can only be aired in this mass democratic conference." Now, as the standing committee of the Preparatory Committee for the Conference of North American Marxist-Leninists pointed out in a statement dated March 21st, since November 19th, class struggle across the United States in the revolutionary ranks has developed to a tremendous amount. This class struggle is taking place, just a second, the class struggle is taking place on the question of who supports this conference of North American Marxist-Leninists, that is, who supports... I'm getting to my question. Who's... And, excuse me. The preparatory committee was told when they asked to be participants in this forum that they have every right to state their views on the floor, and that's what we're doing. All right, this is the question. The struggle that's taking place is over those who support the Conference of North American Marxist-Leninists, that is, support sitting together to sort out problems, exchange views, and struggle for the Marxist-Leninist political line on party billing and proletarian revolution versus those who want to oppose this conference by either ignoring its existence, ignoring the call, or by acting as conciliators for the revisionists and opposing this conference by slanders and gossips. The question is, what stand do you gentlemen on the forum take on this question of the conference?
I think we and all the comrades who spoke so far all made their position clear, that it's not enough to call a conference to declare anything, and that the way communist unity has to be built is in the day-to-day struggles of the working people, and that I think also all the comrades also made their position clear, and I know we did, on the ultra-leftist trend. That is, trying to separate this task of building the party from building the anti-imperialist United Front, or even worse, attacking the anti-imperialist United Front. So the October League, I can just speak to the October League here, we have not endorsed this conference, and we're not supporting this conference that's being held.
I'd like to call on two people for questions, as I said I was going to do. This gentleman here is second in. Yes. And the gentleman here with the hat on. Hold your question just 1 second. Okay, go ahead.
Themselves as Leninists, and I believe everyone who spoke took the position that the black people in this country constitute a black nation. Now, on the national question, Lenin said that in order for a group to constitute a nation, it had to have all four of the following characteristics. Number one, a common geographic area. Number two, the basis for a separate economy. Number three, the common language, and number four, a common culture. And Lenin said you had to have all four of those things to have a nation. Now, part of the question I'd like to ask those who spoke is that how can you call yourself a Leninist and at the same time, you know, oppose what Lenin said on the national question and call blacks a nation when they obviously do not meet at least one of these criteria, which is that they do not have a common geographic area in this country. They're scattered all over. Now, in opposition to the position...
Wait, can we have an end to the hissing? Let him formulate his question.
Thank you. Now, those of us who support the Spartacist League
could you formulate your question, please? Okay, you want to know? Formulate your question, please.
Yes. In view of the facts, the blacks in this country are obviously not a nation by the Leninist definition of that term. Those of us who support the Spartacist League propose the following points in a transitional program to link the struggles of the oppressed...
No, you can't read a lot of points. If you want to ask a question, you may ask it.
All right.
Okay,
I'll stand on the question that I asked before.
Okay.
First, I'm afraid that the questioner was not listening very carefully if he came to the conclusion that all of the speakers put forward the definition that he suggested. I was listening very carefully, and I think that, as has been indicated, this is one of the questions that Marxist-Leninist forces in the United States are debating and struggling with, within the context of great respect for each other's views. I would suggest, respectfully, that the questioner come to the Guardian's next forum, which is precisely on this question, and it's going to be held April the 27th.
Well, the questioner want to know if black people are a nation according to that criteria. We don't believe that anything is static. We believe that things change. It's true that black people are not constituted in one geographical area. And that's because the black nation is a proletarian nation today. That black people were concentrated in one geographical area at one time, and now are dispersed without the country. As Stalin said, the national question is in essence a peasant question. You'd be hard-pressed to find a peasant in the United States today. And you have to look pretty hard. Gotta find a peasant. The fact is that the black nation developed, it's historically constituted, developed in the United States in the rise of capitalism, and today is an overwhelmingly proletarian nation. And it's dispersed precisely for that reason, because it is concentrated in basic industry, and this is true not just in the North, but in the South. The other question is whether there's a separate economy. There is a class structure in the black nation. There is a black bourgeoisie, black petty bourgeoisie, proletariat, lumpen. And there is class struggle in that nation. To say that there is no black bourgeoisie is absolute nonsense. If anybody has, you have to look at the question and see where it lies. There is a black bourgeoisie, although it's mainly a comprador class. Small capitalists, not just merchant capital, small capitalists. And those small capitalists constitute that bourgeoisie. And what they do affects the black community throughout. There is a community, there is a common culture, common psychology among black people in this country. It's not a question of whether the South Side of Chicago or Harlem is going to secede. It's a question that there is a historically constituted nation that exists dispersed without this country.
I have no question. I have an opinion, if I may.
If it's 3 minutes, you can have your...
All right, I will do that.
Or less.
I am indeed grateful to the Guardian for being able to record my opinion on this historic occasion, and I think it is a historic occasion. The Guardian, during the anti-war struggle, years of anti-war struggle, the Guardian took a nonpartisan stand, urging all coalitions and groupings and all those interested to work, to unite their ranks and work for unity. And lately, as a reader of The Guardian, I have seen that The Guardian is indulging in not a uniting force, but a splitting force. It is the height of demagogy to use the term of unity for this occasion of organizing a vanguard party as exponent of the philosophy of Mao. The point is, it is perfectly proper to have such a party in the United States. There is a Soviet Communist Party. There are many varieties of Trotskyist parties. Why not a Maoist party? But the Guardian was fulfilling a task of trying to unite the left, and now it is deserting that position. Okay, thank you.
The person back here with their hand stretched up very high, yes. No, you just turned around now.
Okay, I have
No, I haven't gone on. Oh, yes.
I'm still here. I haven't gone nowhere.
I'm sorry.
I'm just getting these people go off. Apparently they don't understand class and class struggle. But one of the things is I have like three questions. One, two of them are first addressed to the person from The Guardian. One of them is that they refer to the struggle of the masses of black people and didn't say the struggle of the black nation. I want to know why, based on what analysis, you know, why he didn't say that. Why didn't he say the black nation? Does he have an opposing view? Doesn't he see black people as a nation? If so, on what analysis? Also, one of the things that was said was that the matter of the class origin of the party did not matter so much, I think, you know. And I want to be clear exactly what he meant, because I think it's very important to understand the class origin of the Communist Party. And also I wanted to ask a question to the person from OL, which is somewhat similar, which was in his presentation referred to black people and Chicanos as national minorities and not made a clear distinction between black people, Mexican, Chicanos inside the United States, as nations inside the United States, and as other people, Puerto Ricans, you know, Asians, as national minorities. I'm based on what kind of thinking?
The formulation that I used here tonight reflects the thinking of the Guardian staff, conceitedly, at this stage of its development, in referring to the struggles of the black people. I talked about the oppressed black nationality in this country. We do not consider it our task as a newspaper at this point to come up with the theoretical formulation that is going to that we want to project on this question before the Marxist-Leninist movement as a whole. We recognize that there are differing analyses. We believe that those differing analyses stem from the same set of assumptions that the positions that are being put forward today on this critical question are all motivated by the greatest desire for working class unity and for the liberation of black people in this country. And we believe that, in essence, that theoretical question will be worked out in practice. On the question of the class composition of the party, if in any way I gave the impression that we did not consider this an important question, then I will accept that as a criticism. We believe that the new Communist Party must be firmly rooted in the working class, that its membership must be predominantly of the working class. The reference that was made to other class origins has to do with the fact that historically, the working class and communist movement has always been able to utilize the best efforts of revolutionary intellectuals and people from other classes who have been successful in transforming their class orientation so that they can become genuine revolutionaries of the working class.
With regards to the October League's position on the national question, I think it's already been said that there'll be a forum next month. Comrade Sherman Miller is going to be speaking for us, putting forth our position on the national question, especially as it regards Afro-American people. Basically, we view the question as a national question. That's the way it has historically developed. That's always been the position of Marxism-Leninism on the question. Personally thought that Lenin didn't believe that. He should read his article, Statistics and Sociology. Lenin makes it very clear Afro-American people are a nation. This has been the position of the whole Communist International Movement for 30 years. It was only abandoned by the CPUSA revisionists recently. And that's our view, too. Our main work recently has been trying to do concrete investigation of the situation today, investigate how things have changed, investigate some of the questions that the comrade from the RU has raised, and to the best of our ability, the comrade will present these next month.
I'll call on one other speaker, one other questioner to line up after this questioner. The comrade back here? Yes.
Yeah, I raise this question in a completely sympathetic context, but I think it's something that hasn't been dealt with seriously by the panelists. And it's a question that I feel very strongly, and I think I'm speaking for a rather large number of women who are presently not in Marxist-Leninist organizations, but who would like to be. And the problem that we have is that many of us only are able to move to this position of thinking of ourselves functioning as cadre among the masses because of the insights we have gained about ourselves through the mass women's movement. And I'd like to know what implications these people from these various organizations see coming out of the insights of the women's movement for the internal organization of the Communist Party. I mean, there is a separate question about the organizing of proletarian women. I'm not asking that right now. I'm asking the question, for the first time in history, I think, have a certain advance over the theory we've gotten from Marx, Lenin, Stalin, and Mao on the material basis for character structure and for consciousness, that now seeing that consciousness is formed both by one's class role and by one's sex role, that I think that we have to have a theory of a materialist analysis of the functions of consciousness in that way in order to avoid problems of failures of democracy, mechanistic thinking, imposition and projection of one's own problems on one's work with the people. I think, for instance, that the problem of democratic centralism is misconstrued by Trotskyists and anarchists as being either a problem of structure or a problem of personality, and that it might be fruitful to consider to what extent problems of creating democracy are in fact rooted in kind of structured sex role behavior. And I wonder if people have given a thought that the women's movement in fact contributes something to our understanding of the problems of developing cadre that can be honest and self-reliant, and that some kind of consciousness raising is important within a Marxist-Leninist organization so that we properly relate the personal and the political. That is, we politicize our notion of our personal lives rather than falsely relate them, and so that we can avoid the corruptions of inequality within the class that derives from the structure of sex roles. I wonder if people feel that any of these insights raised by the women's movement are going to be important to the way in which we develop cadre within a Marxist-Leninist organization.
The question of consciousness raising, in other words, raising the understanding of the masses of people, and in this particular case, the question of women make up half of humanity. This is really a fundamental question to Marxist-Leninists and towards any genuine Communist Party. That special task has to be taken up by the party to train and to educate the advanced fighters from among the masses of women, the main leaders in the fight for women's rights, the main activists in the democratic movement of women's rights. And this is an essential question. In terms of the kind of consciousness-raising groups that the sister was talking about, I'm not really clear about the particularities of how she meant it. And in terms of people's sex roles defining this consciousness, I don't really understand that very much. I think the main test that has to be applied to every Marxist-Leninist organization and party is to what degree that they take up the fight for the women, to what degree that they go out and organize the women workers, and to what degree that women fighters are trained and educated in the spirit of Marxist-Leninist struggle. And we think that this has to be done in the context of mass struggle and mass participation, and not in a small internalized fashions apart from mass struggle. So that's the main thing I'd like to say about that question.
I believe that we are witnessing a very important social transformation at this time, which the sister was referring to, and I think that one of the things we're witnessing is the changing character of what's called sex roles. There's nothing that mystical about sex roles in a social sense. What we are actually witnessing historically is the development of the integration of women into the workforce. And that will be the most important factor in changing traditional sex roles and in unifying the struggle of women for emancipation, for full democratic rights, with the overall class struggle. And I believe that a Marxist-Leninist movement, a Marxist-Leninist party, will be working for the full democratic rights of women precisely because this is the crucial step in the integration of women into the proletariat and for the development of the class struggle as a unified class struggle between men and women workers.
We have one person to ask a question. We'll have one more ready at the mic. This woman back here. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I would like to address myself to the call for a conference of North American Marxist-Leninists, which the woman comrade referred to briefly in the first question, because I don't think
you
that the...
You may formulate a question. We've heard about the conference.
Yes. I have a question.
Ask the question.
I have this question because I don't think it was answered seriously earlier, and it wasn't answered at all by the other people. Briefly, I would just like to say... and see if people can consider it a serious answer to brand as ultra-leftism the fact that five separate communist organizations, Marxist-Leninist organizations in the United States...
This doesn't seem to be a question.
There will be a question. I believe that there's 3 minutes involved. With the assistance of the first Marxist-Leninist party in North America, the Communist Party of Canada, Marxist-Leninist participating, that anybody can just off the top of his hat brand as left sectarian and ultra-leftism such a conference. I would like to know what the other people up on the stage also feel about this conference.
Okay.
Because many people take it quite seriously and should not just slip it under the rug, but should deal with it politically.
We will not be attending the conference. We don't think that the situation is right for the formation of the party by proclamation, so we will not be in attendance.
I make a suggestion. It seems that many organizations are using this as a place to put forth their ideas. Now, if the persons who want to ask questions would submit them to you in writing, and then you could see which organizations are trying to use this as a platform.
Well, what I'll try to do
is... If you get
I'll
these questions, then you can pick out which ones you'll answer.
I'll try to maintain...
And this way, you'll avoid this question of people trying to use...
The next questioner, please...
I work at MAWA, and the question that I have to some of...
Could this gentleman continue with his question? The way we work this is that the speakers who wish to respond. We have one response. The others did not indicate that they wanted to respond. So, can this questioner please ask his question?
Yeah, I work at Mawa in the auto plant, and one of the problems that we were having, which I thought maybe some of the speakers could respond to, is in building the whole rank and file movement, the question of winning the white workers in the shop to the struggle against racism. I mean, we had certain struggles around shutting down the production on King Day, the question of upgrading black workers and integrating the skilled trades, the question of racist abuse of foremen, the question of the whole Nixon racist policies, but we like more discussion, and we wondered how some of the, particularly some of the white comrades on the stage, have their struggles in winning white workers for black-white unity and against the struggle on white racism. And I'm one of the young members of the old CP.
One thing that we've tried to do is within the communist organization, and in our case within the October League, and we feel within the Communist Party, once it's built, there has to be in some sense a certain division of labor. That while the party as a whole has a task of organizing the class as a whole, that the white comrades in the organization have a special responsibility. Going among the white working people, as they can best do, in the plants, in the community, and struggling against great nation, or in this case, white chauvinism. We think that the minority comrades have also a special responsibility, placing the main emphasis of work and concentration among the minority workers and the national press workers, and pushing for unity and trying to combat narrow nationalism. Our experiences, there's a few of them I can speak to. One was the last autumn strike at the Mead Corporation in Atlanta, which was a wildcat strike in which initially there was something like 95% of the participation in it was among the black workers, and that because of a lot of backward ideas, a lot because of peer group pressure, that most of the white workers wouldn't support it at first. And so for us it was a real testing ground for a lot of theories and a lot of concepts that before had been relegated to the realm of abstraction. Chance to test it in practice. The black workers were very conscious of the need to win the white workers. And initially, before the strike was called, there was a weakness on the part of the more conscious white cadre in the plant that not enough work was done among the white workers. That the spontaneous tendency was to gravitate towards the so-called most advanced only, which in this case was mainly the black workers. And I think this was a point that one of the comrades brought up about only working among the advanced. One of the consequences of this is, on our part, was a weakness in terms of this strike in neglecting initially the work of the white workers. It took many forms. For one thing, we didn't leave any of the white cadre in the plant after the wildcat strike was called, where they could have better access to the white workers. We had everybody out on the line. That was just a tactical manifestation of this error. Later, when the emphasis really was on trying to win the white workers over, and where our comrades really made a strong effort to, it was very hard to do because there was lack of access. They brought the workers in under armed guard. It was hard to reach them. It was hard to talk with them. Now, since the workers have gone back into the plant, since the strike has ended, concentrated effort has been made to win the white workers. And a lot of the white workers came and told us that they were ashamed that they hadn't gone out on the strike. They wanted to join the Mead Caucus of Rank and File Workers. And they explained that if they would have been looked upon so-called as nigger lovers, quote. But they saw that that was wrong. A lot of them had a strong union feeling, see, and they felt very bad. A lot of them, a lot of the white workers that didn't walk on the line, they stayed home and honored the strike. And they took a lot of stuff for it when they got back, too. But throughout the whole thing, it was the black workers that were the most conscious, that even when there was only like half a dozen workers in the caucus or out on the strike line, they continually saw the need and the possibility to win the white workers. So I think that part of the point I'm trying to make here is that this ultra-leftism in terms of organizational work and the neglect for the work among the white workers in fighting white supremacy, white chauvinism, that these go together. And there's got to be a special work, and it's got to be done in the context of mass struggle. And there can't be any idealist notions involved in that. In terms of just changing people's ideas about racism apart from that struggle. Trying to do it in the abstract.
Just a brief comment. Which one? That in trying to promote a black-white unity on the job, a lot of it has been the stress on, as we've seen it, on how to build caucuses in the plant, the need for national forums and multinational forums. We've seen that in the history of working people that under conditions that face the same oppression, the same conditions on the plant, that there can be unity, that generally, in fact, that white workers, even though they may be racist, can unite with black workers in the plant. Now, this doesn't come automatically. It's very important for white workers, one thing, to understand the national oppression of black people. Understand the whole question of self-determination. On the other hand, in terms of developing multinational and especially national forms, to combat narrow nationalism and to understand what are the basic class interests of all the workers. Now, in terms of national formations, what we have to do in terms of national formations as well as multinational formations in caucuses and plants, is essentially the job of the communists is to raise that consciousness. Because people do face oppression, and in many plants, especially plants where there's a large number of black workers, many of the black workers are on the line, white workers are either in skilled jobs or in secondary line positions. And this creates divisions. Obviously, this is what it's for. But we know that there can be unity, but it sometimes has to be built on a national form. We can see where national forms and multinational forms can merge inside a plant. But they have to be developed by raising the consciousness of all the workers. On the one hand, in the multinational form, and understanding the problem, the oppression of black people, the dual oppression of black people, in the national form, understanding the black people, the role they play in terms of developing class unity, the unity of the whole class.
We think that we've had at most a most significant and recent experience situation that developed in the plant independently of our efforts. And we were in fact in a way drafted by some workers in a particular plant to involve ourselves in their developing caucus. They began with a multinational caucus and the workplace that was in fact initiated by white rank-and-file workers. And we found that it solved a lot of problems for us in this particular situation, because in the abstract we were wondering and pondering the question of how would the question of the intermediate workers organization work itself out in some areas, and that was whether we should proceed from premise of organizing multinational forums in all cases, or whether we should attempt to organize national forums in all cases. We find, though, that emerging out of this struggle and some of the other plants that we have been involved in are both forms. And in the particular instance that I cited originally, the multinational forum began first. It is developing fairly rapidly, fairly substantially. But inside that multinational forum, that is developing because of the historic relationship of the blacks in terms of their relationship away from the job, a black caucus that addresses itself to other issues that they, and the more, you know, political issues that face the community where the particular plant's located. We think that probably in most of the heavily industrialized areas that we will have a situation emerging of both the national and the multinational form in the immediate future.
Next question.
In view of the observation made earlier by a sister that a growing number of women have developed class consciousness within the context of the women's movement, and acknowledging that all the members of the panel have identified themselves and their organizations as supporting the equality and the democratic rights of women, I'd like to pose the following question, that although an increasing number of women are entering the workforce specifically and also including the industrial proletariat, there are specific problems to organizing women at the point of production, which stem from women's perception of themselves both as workers, but very importantly as wives and mothers trying to hold families together, and that these problems have arisen in particular cases where the organizations represented on this panel have been organizing and have had difficulties because of these problems of how women see themselves as workers. And I would like the members of the panel to address themselves to the question of what this implies for their development of strategies for their organizations.
Tremendous attempt on the part of the imperialists to attack the working people's family life, to drive them apart. Anybody who's ever been on welfare can tell you about how it's done. Even the question of integrating the women into production under this system has meant, for the most part, that the working women have two jobs instead of one.